Jeff Merrick is right now joining us in a pickup truck being driven by Colby Armstrong.
I know. This has an OJ feel to it, right? Turn here, Cowling.
I love Colby Armstrong as the Al Cowlings of Canada is pretty solid. But how's the Memorial Cup going, buddy?
We're just driving back from the WFCU Center, watching all the skates, taping a bunch of stuff, doing a Facebook Live. I don't know. Cole, who impressed you today? Which of the teams? Who looked good? He's going to say Seattle. He's a Western Hockey League guy, so he says the Seattle Thunderbirds. Take it with a grain of salt. Who looked good? You watched the skates more than I did.
Yeah, I watched the skates. I don't know. I like Sergachev.
Sergachev looked good for Windsor?
He has a bomb. Like, he does a great
job. He does have a bomb. Like, he's got five different shots that Warren Whitecourt played with last year, including Sifter. One of the great conversations I've ever had in hockey, me and Colby and Todd, having breakfast with Warren Reichel, former NHLer, owner/general manager of the Windsor Spitfires, explaining to us all the different shots that Mikhail Sergachev has. He's got, let me make sure I get it right here, Colby. He's got the slap shot,
yep.
He's got the wrist shot, he's got the backhand,
snapshot.
He's got the snapshot and the sifter.
Yes.
I have no idea what a sifter is. Got like a little sifter, just sort of sifts it in from the point. To this day, I don't know what it is. But yeah, no, every now and then, Colby and I would just break. Oh yeah, nice sifter. Yeah,
I think he sounds like a very special player, Sergachev, and I would imagine that, you know, maybe they'd be interested in trading him for Kovalchuk.
Well, here's the weird thing. I don't know how. Like, it's a great question too. Like, I don't know how Montreal gets better. Like, you're Montreal, you figure, okay, the window is still open, still have time for some short-term, you know, success here. I don't know how they get better without trading Sergachev.
You think so?
Well, that's the one that everyone asks for, right? Like, if you want to bring in some help down the middle, I mean, you're not going to get a first-line center for Nathan Beaulieu. Like, it's going to be packaged involving, you know, a high-end prospect, and their number one guy is Mikhail Sergachev.
So you're saying if they want to improve right now, the window's open, yada, 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 they have to deal him rather than playing the long game. Yeah.
Don't you think? I mean, that's the one that everyone's asking for. Like, if you want some help right now, I mean, the main assets you have are your draft picks and your prospects. And everybody's asking for Sergachev, and for good reason. The guy, you know, skates like he's in a rocking chair. Like, there's no panic to his game. And he's got the sifter, right, Greg? So many guys have the sifter.
But don't you think that basically turns him into Ryan McDonough at some point? Like, they're going to completely regret having dealt him at some point?
It's a great one. I know. They've done it before. Yeah. Well, I mean, they traded Ryan McDonough and they traded PK Subban. So it's not as if they haven't traded young defensemen before to try to get some immediate need. But if you're Mark Bergevin, I mean, when your window is right now and you need to impress upon Carey Price that you're going to go for it, because let's not forget, you have to re-up with him. Did they have time to wait for Mikhail Sergachev to turn into a top pairing defenseman? I don't know. I would venture the answer is no. If it's win now in Montreal, it's going to be tough to hang on to Sergachev, because that's who everybody wants, and for good reason. Guy's legit.
All right, let's turn to the cup here. What do you think about what happened last night with Ottawa and Pittsburgh? And do you think that the Penguins have a prayer in this series if they can't get healthy?
Man, last night was Pittsburgh Penguins game 6 against Washington, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
Like, we've kind of seen this movie before. Like, Ottawa won every single puck battle. Ottawa was first of the puck. Ottawa got, you know, everything that was a scoring chance and went in. It was one of those nights. You know, there was some glorious opportunity on the power play where if Phil Kessel doesn't have a 60 flex stick, he could one time a puck, but because he does, he's got to cradle it and get a wrist shot off.
Well,
like,
listen,
everything fell apart for Pittsburgh last night.
You take the good, you take the bad with that flex, right? I mean, he does a lot of really good with that flex too.
He totally, and I understand that, but when you're setting up one timers for Phil, he can't, the twig's going to go.
But I'm sure in no way, shape, or form did he blame the passer when he went back to the bench, right?
I can't agree with that. Yeah, either the stick itself or the passer or everything, I don't know. the clouds were aligned improperly.
What happened last night's freaky. I mean, I think that sometimes you just get marauded by a team on home ice, especially when they score 48 seconds into the game on a fluky bounce. Like, a lot of things aligned against.
This isn't just like, you know, Pittsburgh, you know, threw a clunker. Like, good for Ottawa. Like, I don't.
Yeah, for sure.
You guys are just like, you guys are not talking about the Ottawa Senators. Show some respect. Ottawa played a hell of a game. Ottawa were aggressive as hell. We thought, okay, we think Ottawa Senators, you know, there's passive, you know, it's a 50-50 puck, you bail out and go in the neutral zone. Like, that wasn't Ottawa last night. Now, mind you, they had a cushion to play with, but they were going for it. They were an aggressive team. They were more aggressive than the Penguins were. Like, they were more aggressive than one of, you know, the best skating, most aggressive teams in the NHL, the Pittsburgh Penguins, for a full 60 minutes. Kudos to the Ottawa Senators.
Absolutely, and that brings us to the point, though, is that three guys that scored in Game 7 against the Capitals, Brian Rust, Patrick Hornquist, Justin Schultz, are all did not play in Game 3, will probably not play in Game 4.
Yeah.
And this is a Penguins team right now that in three games has two even strength goals against Ottawa. I don't know how you flip a switch and get a bunch of guys that probably shouldn't even be in this lineup right now but are in there because of injury to all of a sudden play the style of hockey that's required to beat the Senators. I don't know if they can win this series, even if Mike Sullivan pulls another rabbit out of his hat.
And you have players like Juan Hainsey who are really struggling out there as well. I know. Like, it doesn't – like, the high end is really high end. You know this pains Crosby. You know this really pains Malkin. Malkin, like, we were talking about this last night watching the game. Like, Malkin's a beast. He's such a delight to watch. I mean, the Crosby story is well told. But, man, I love when Malkin gets a little pissed off, don't you?
Yeah, I love
when that guy plays when he's angry. There's like there's a real sort of deliberateness to his game when he's pissed off, mm-hmm. either at the other team or maybe in some occasions teammates. And that goes a long way with me. I really enjoy watching this guy.
Well, he's one of the few guys in this league that actually can achieve the Marshawn Lynch beast mode moniker with the way he skates, with his size. There are times when he has such force in his game that there's nothing you can do but just marvel at it. We haven't seen that enough, I think, in these playoffs. That's the other thing I'm concerned about too, dude. It's like, you know, I saw there was some discussion today on Sportsnet, probably during Hockey Central, about, you know, what do they have to do to get Crosby going? Well, maybe that's, you can't. Maybe the after effects of the Niskanen incident are still lingering. He's still not the same guy that we saw earlier in the playoffs. I don't know if there's a way to really get him going. Maybe he's just part of the walking wounded.
Perhaps. I mean, I think he's maybe the best self-motivator in the NHL, Crosby. So I don't think it's a matter of, you know, what can they put around him to get him going. Crosby's kind of always done that for himself all his career, hasn't he? You know, mm-hmm. whether he was, you know, here I am, you know, in the middle of Memorial Cup prep for this year's edition. You think back to that 205 Rimouski team. Total self-starter, put an entire team on his back, okay, like an entire team, and won the President Cup, was a QMJHL champion, and then willed a Rimouski team into the final, only to fall to Corey Perry's London Knights.
Yeah,
he's a self-starter, man. I always find that conversation weird. What can we do to get Sid going? Sid gets Sid going.
Well, that's why the Penguins went through about 100 line mates for him before Kunitz settled in there, right? Ask Colby.
Let me get back to Malkin for a sec. You know, the interesting thing about Malkin, and we saw this last night, who out of anyone on the Pittsburgh Penguins in any of these scrums is the most likely to drop his gloves and fight?
Probably Gino, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, out of all of it, it's like one of your Uber stars.
Yeah.
The most highly skilled and the toughest and the guy that you can see just going snap case on someone.
I saw Kunitz tried to get rough in game, I think in game two.
Yeah.
And it reminded me of like if the little guy in the chauffeur hat who was friends with Scuff Farkas in the Christmas Story tried to beat up somebody who's very like, the little buddy decides to start getting physical with people. But
buddy's game, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's game.
Mm-hmm.
And give it to Ottawa. Like, I mean, they're playing their hearts out. They're winning all the, you know, the puck races, the puck battles, and in a lot of cases, they're trying to run the Pittsburgh Penguins out of the rink. So far, they have. They did last night, that's sure.
flipping over to the other series, we haven't done a show since the Ryan Kessler, Ryan Johansson tete-a-tete. What did you make of that, by the way?
Great job by Johansson.
You thought
so? First of all, he outplayed him on the ice, and then...
Oh, completely.
And then, and here's where I think it was brilliant. Like, you got to give this guy marks. A lot of players, you know, after getting harassed by Ryan Kessler the entire time, what would they say? They would complain about the officiating. But he didn't. He complained about Ryan Kessler. Now, he took it to family and friends, which is unique territory to post game. But it was really clever. Like, it was a way of saying, hey, guys, do your job. But he focused it all on Ryan Kessler, didn't go out of his way to embarrass officials, didn't say, oh, there's sleep at the switch, and I can't believe he's getting away with this, and the referees need to do their job. All he said was, I can't believe, like, friends and family would, like, watch this guy. Like, you'd have to, like, the way he did it was really brilliant, because what he was doing was telling the referees to do their job without publicly telling the referees to do their job. It was great. It really was. I thought it was, well, I don't know how you felt about it, but I thought it was a brilliant play by Johansson.
I felt he needed to go cliche route and just say, you know, I'm not worried about what he's doing. I'm just concentrating on my game and left it at that. And as far as like what I want for clicks, of course I want more of it. I want him to drop his pants and point at it and say, here you go, Kess. That's what I want for clicks, of course. But the thing is that, like, when you've thoroughly outplayed somebody in the first two games of the series, I didn't think it was necessary. I felt like it was feeding the beast at a point where you didn't need to feed it.
Yeah, perhaps. I mean, the underlying story in all this is, you know, in a lot of ways, a lot of different players at Nashville are starting to get big-time recognition.
Yeah.
Ryan Ellis certainly is, although I think of that, a lot of the recognition on that blue line should go to Matthias Ekholm.
Yeah,
consistently. Colby said Arvidsson, who everyone has suddenly discovered.
Yeah, Steve Simmons discovered Arvidsson. Isn't that exciting? Like, Arvidsson was such an unknown coming into these playoffs, having played on their top line, but now everybody seems to know him.
Yeah, hey, Colby, do you know, you see this guy 38? That little guy? Didn't you play against him in Sweden? You start noticing guys. Yeah, we've just started discovered a 35-goal plus. I think Matthias Ekholm is that guy, certainly, and Ryan Johansson, who's always had, and this goes back, like, again, I'll go back to the junior reference, this goes back to his time in Portland. His time in Portland playing on a line with Brad Ross and Nino Niederreiter, I mean, they were like the kids that showed up to the games with shorts and flops and were just really good hockey players, ended up getting beat by a really finely tuned Kootenay team, coached by Knobloch, who's coaching the Erie Otters right now. There was always the question of, we know that Johansson is loaded with skill. Is he going to be able to put it all together consistently? And these playoffs, they are. I mean, that was always the frustration in Columbus with Johansson at times, because he was benched. There was that frustration in Nashville with him and Peter Laviolette. But these playoffs, he's been dynamic. He's been, you know, almost everything you want in a first line center.
Yeah. And you could feel the pull of Nashville now. Like, you know, it feels less like a team and more like a movement. It feels like you have the energy of the city, everything happening around that team. It's all kind of starting to feel a little inevitable, but it's just really hard to write off the Ducks because of the way that they've shown resiliency.
You can't write them off. No way. That team is way too good. Can score in bunches and has Ryan Getzlaff on it. Like, I ain't writing off the Ducks. I know that it feels like this is Nashville series, but I'm not writing off Anaheim. I can still see the Anaheim winning this thing.
My favorite question, by the way, of the week was posed by somebody to Matt Irwin in a press conference where he was out there for the Predators. And the question was, what is it like when you're out in the city? Do people stop and talk to you? And Matt Irwin said, to tell you the truth, you don't get stopped too often, but you feel the buzz in the city. And I'm thinking to myself, first of all, how do you ask Matt Irwin that question, for God's sakes? It's like, it's not Ryan Ellis. It's not PK Subban. It's Matt Irwin, for God's sakes.
Matt Irwin, bottom pairing defenseman. I know.
It's a great
question. But good for him for stick handling the answer, too, and not just embarrassing the dude. But being honest at the same time. Like, I'm not getting pulled over. Like, hey, Matt Irwin, high five. Yeah, we love that third pairing Nashville D.
Yeah, indeed. Oh, so good. Before we get too deep here, what did you think about our boy Botterill finally getting a gig in Buffalo?
it was inevitable, you know, that that he ended up somewhere. He's that part of that second, that next wave. I still don't think that they're done hiring in Buffalo.
Right, you mentioned that, yeah.
Yeah, I still get the sense that they're going to bring in, I don't know what the term is, senior advisor, for lack of a better term, which is probably the way, now that we're going to look at a bunch of, you know, 40-year-olds getting GM jobs in the NHL, probably the way that it's going to go. Now you're going to have someone to sort of exist as a sounding board, someone to deal with season ticket holders, corporate sponsors. I mean, the GM's portfolio now is, you know, probably, even though it's, you know, it's triple capped, and a lot of ways your hands are tied by what you can do with your financial structure. The GM's portfolio is pretty big, and for a rookie GM to come in and nail it is real tough. So, good on Botchwell, good on the Buffalo Sabres for this one. He was one of those guys that whenever a job becomes available, you know, whether it's Paul Fantin or Julien Brisebois, he's in that conversation. I hope that Buffalo's got a good one here, because, you know, I would like to see a team around Jack Eichel that is consistently competitive, because, you know, more Jack Eichel in this NHL is a good thing, because dude is just so effing good.
Indeed. Real brief, the Sabres and Florida Panthers coaching openings.
Yeah.
There's been some talk about Rick Tocchet maybe being the guy in Buffalo, but like,
yeah.
I don't know if he's interviewed there. I know that he's interviewed for the Panthers job, but Todd Reirden seems to be the guy that I think would end up in Buffalo, just based on their needs on the defensive end and his expertise there, and
yep.
the connection that he has with Botterill going back to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, Michelle Therrien's getting some concert with the Florida Panthers on the PDO cast this week. I was banging the drum pretty loud for Dallas Aikens. I still think there's a fit there with the Florida Panthers and him. So we'll see. There's, you know, no shortage of coaching candidates out there.
I kind of love Therrien in Florida, by the way. Like, I mean, I feel like that's a team that needs to have some level of regular season success on a regular... And that's the only thing he does.
Let's ask someone who was coached by Michelle Therrien. Colby,
yeah.
You think Therrien in Florida would be a good fit?
I think it would.
Because
they need to get it straightened out there, and he's a guy that can come in and has proven that he can come in and take a program and flip it
Yeah.
down.
You hear that one?
I did, yeah, and I think we could officially put Colby's name on the episode now as the guest.
Now we can use you as promotion for this episode. Guess Colby Armstrong.
My thought is that he's a good fit. Oh,
we're
come on. Well,
paid. No one gets paid.
No one gets paid. Come on, man. I think Therrien's a really good fit in Florida because they have some of the most lax public smoking laws. And I feel like he would really love it down there. Yeah.
Yeah, you know what? Greg brings up a good point, Colby. You can smoke pretty much anywhere in Florida. That could be a real good fit. It might work out good for everybody here. That's a good one.
Hey,
yeah.
Some mailbag stuff before you go, because people want to know some things.
Pulling up to the hotel here. Hang on a second. Let me just get out.
Hey,
how's it going, bud?
Good. How are you?
I'm good.
You guys checking in, eh?
No, we're already here. Just coming back. Yeah. Sorry. Getting back to the hotel.
Hey, listen.
Go ahead. Mailbag stuff. Go for it.
Kyle Wilkins wants to know if his buddy and him can buy you a beer at the Memorial Cup this weekend.
I'm around. But yeah, by all means. Like, as soon as the games are done, I'm happy to have a ginger ale with anybody.
Floppy Cakes wants to know something a little bit scary.
Who?
Floppy Cakes.
If that is indeed your real name. Okay, go ahead.
Given the Senators' success, will the 1-3-1 catch on next season?
Hope not. That's the one thing I love. We all do like so many of the stories with the Ottawa Senators, but I don't like the story that goes like this. Coaches always mimic that which is successful. I don't know that I want to see that coaching style rewarded in any way, shape, or form. I don't want that to become a thing in the NHL. I don't think any of us do.
Yeah, and also, like, I understand how exciting the first 12 minutes of Game 3 were. It wound up being a really boring game. just to underscore that a little bit.
Yeah, no, that's true.
And finally, I guess. Finally, I wanted someone was asking about how would you rank the Seattle grunge scene Big Four, And I'm guessing I guess Pearl Jam, Nirvana, Alice in Chains, and Soundgarden would be the big four as we discuss the death of Chris Cornell. Do you have a ranking? Do you have a ranking of the big four?
That's interesting. Hang on a sec. Cool. I'll give you a call upstairs. Wow. First of all, Cornell to me is like the ultimate rock voice.
Yeah.
That's such a drag. I woke up. That was the first news that I saw when I woke up this morning. What a bummer way to start the day.
Well, I woke up to hearing that Roger Ailes was dead, and then the Cornell thing really undercut that joy for me. So
yeah, and there's a fly ball to shallow left center. That'll end the inning. How would I rank that? Nirvana would be number one. See, I was never big on the Seattle scene. Too many bottom lip singers for me. and I blame Barbara Streisand, who started all of it. I'm convinced. anyone can do this, okay, folks. Right now, you're listening on the treadmill, or you're out running, or you're just listening on your tractor, on your farm, as we saw over the weekend.
Talking to you, Daryl Sutter.
So, hey, Daryl. Hey, Viking Alberta. Just start singing out of it. Don't move your bottom lip, and then just start singing. You too can be in a Seattle grunge band.
There it is.
Bingo. You're ready, better. Everyone can do this. Right? It's like the Bruce Springsteen trick. Just take two fingers, stick them down your throat, you know, mumble some stuff every now and then, pop up and say New Jersey, and then call it a day. But the bottom lip thing was always a turnoff for me. And even to this day, when I hear bottom lip singing on the radio, I'm like, yep, nope, turn it off. That's probably why I'm not a big, huge Pearl Jam fan. But there are some songs I dig. If I was going to put the hierarchy together, it would either be, man, it might be a tie between Soundgarden and Nirvana. For top spot, then Pearl Jam, then Alice in Chains.
I go Nirvana, Pearl Jam, Soundgarden, Alice in Chains. I wasn't the biggest Soundgarden guy, but that's because I think that at the end of the day, I might have more pop sensibility than anything else. And I think Pearl Jam put together some good pop songs. Soundgarden.
I just like Soundgarden because they were like, I always default to percussion, and they had like some great percussive tunes.
Yeah, Matt Cameron, Jesus.
Oh, so good, right? So that's why I dug on. That's why I dug on Soundgarden. So yeah, bummer of a day, man. That's not good. That's a really shitty way to start it.
I agree. And it's not to make anybody who's a big Alice in Chains fan feel shitty. Just be happy that they finished above Mudhoney.
Yeah, you're in the conversation. Man.
You're in the conversation, yeah. anything you want to talk about or say before?
Listen, man, this to me is my Stanley Cup, the Memorial Cup. I've always loved this thing. It's a treat to do it. This is my fourth Memorial Cup that I've hosted. London, Quebec City, Red Deer, and now Windsor. We start our pregame show Friday at 6:30 Eastern. Puck drops in Windsor between the Spitfires and the Sea Dogs just after 7. And the good thing about this tournament is you're hoping there's a lot of overtime because these are all heavyweight teams. Like, there's no Cinderellas. There's no, like, oh, our goaltender got hot. The first-place team got upset in the opening round, and we sort of, you know, had a hot power play, and here we are in the Memorial Cup. It's a Cinderella story, and we bow out in 3. Like, every single team in the, and that includes Windsor, the host team, we bowed out in the first round of the OHL playoffs. All these teams are stacked. Like, there are no lightweights in this tournament at all. I think this is, you know, since I've been doing the tournament, the most I've excited, just from a strictly hockey point of view, this is the most excited I've been of any tournament that I've ever covered. So should be a good one.
Awesome. Fantastic.
Yes? Two U.S. teams involved.
Well, Erie and
Seattle. You just mentioned.
There it
Come
is.
On. Come on. This is now with Chris Cornell, you know, no longer sharing oxygen with us, that becomes a sentimental favorite for all the grunge hockey fans.
You have to remember that I don't really follow too much outside the NHL because if the United States is involved in an international hockey, in any hockey tournament, I'm only paying attention if it's kids or women, so I guess, right? I probably should pay attention to this tournament, yeah?
It's a good one, man. There's tons of prospects, like whether it's Matthew Barzal or Thomas Chabot or Dylan Strome or Alex DeBrincat, or we talked about Sergachev earlier, Logan Brown. Like, St. John has, you know, Matthew Joseph and Spencer Smallman. They got 11 players that are either drafted or signed by NHL teams. It's good, man. It's a juggernaut tournament this time around.
Don't you think that he should change his name or at least have his name pronounced DeBrincat and then also put an apostrophe in it somewhere?
Why?
just to get us closer to Brindamore, and also because DeBrindacat is a better name.
If he, it is a great name. The problem is he's drafted by Chicago and not Carolina. With Carolina, I'd be right there with you. Maybe break his nose a few times. You know, like run the 100-yard dash and 90-yard gym a few times. Get that.
Mm-hmm.
Get that.
And then eventually take a baller shirtless picture with the cup standing over a stream like Brindamore did once.
Yeah, and then have to get, you know, and then, you know, the story goes, Jim Rutherford used to have to lock the gym after games in Carolina because Brindamore would always be trying to get in the gym even after games, so much of a workout fiend he was.
And then for the rest of your life, you'll have 10 people making the same argument that you should be a Hall of Famer over and over again that falls on deaf ears.
Yeah, not so sure about that one.
Neither am I.
I like them, trust me. I like Brindamore, but not that much.
All right. Well, Jeffy, you're the best, and we'll talk to you soon, and enjoy the tournament. And Kyle, if you're out there, just follow Jeffy's Twitter and see if he's tooling around someplace to buy him a
pop. I'm around, bud. I will be there every single day. Unless maybe if there's no tie break next Thursday, then we won't. But other than that, it's a game of night.
And he's not one to have a ginger ale and bend someone's ear with hockey tails, but you might be the lucky one, Kyle.
Yeah, that's totally not my bailiwick at all. It's like, has he stopped talking yet? Can I leave?
I'll talk to you soon. Jeffy Merrick and special episode guest Colby Armstrong. Sam, seriously, put his name on the podcast now. Like, he counts. Like, he counts on this episode. Three things before I bid you adieu. The first off is I published something on Puck Daddy today regarding Jeremy Roenick, Joey Vendetta, and the Ottawa Senators' attendance. Like, I'm all here for your criticisms of Ottawa's attendance, because I think most of them track back to mismanagement, and they track back to the location of the arena. I don't think they track back to the passion of Senators fans. I think much like every other struggling market when it comes to filling seats at different times in the season, it has to do with the inability of the team for whatever reason to captivate more people to become fans than it does the paying customers. Not, in the words of Jeremy Roenick, basically being entitled, thinking that this is going to happen every year is kind of what he indicated. But in Roenick's defense, he was led astray by guest host Joey Vendetta, who said the game last night in Ottawa was not a sellout. In fact, it was. I think some apologies are in order, to be honest with you, because as a fan of a team that has had its attendance struggles itself for the last 25 years and has not sold out playoff games, the fact of the matter is that the Ottawa Senators fans stepped up and did sell out a conference final playoff game despite contentions to the contrary. So I think that's a really bad look. On the Senators and the Devils, I'm in a real weird spot because the more I see this team, the more it does remind me of the 95 Devils, as much as I don't want to admit it. I think at the end of the day, the 95 Devils, as I've said other places, have evoked more emotion from people. I think people felt something about Stevens. I think people felt something about Claude Lemieux. There's probably palpable hate for the trap in a way that there's not necessarily palpable hate for the 1-3-1 quite yet. Also, I think the Senators right now are seen as doing God's work and taking out the Rangers and taking out the Bruins and now taking out the Penguins. So they have a lot of fans. They're pretty happy right now, I think, with the scrappy underdog Senators. Maybe less so if they ended up taking out the Nashville Predators, who are, of course, the playoff darling. But, you know, I guess it all comes full circle. Like, I'm reading the criticisms of the Senators as boring. I'm reading the palpable fear of some people that the 1-3-1 is going to become the norm. I'm reading the fact that people don't want to see this team anywhere near a championship series because of the lack of entertainment value inherent in the way they play. And I've come to imagine that these are probably the things that were written and said about the Devils. And I, as a Devils fan, of course, tuned them all out, for my team was a team of destiny. You know, playing the way they did, coming so close to being the Rangers in the previous season, and just loving every minute of it. So I'm drawn to the Senators in a way in which it feels familiar to me as a Devils fan. And I guess in that aspect, I do feel some kinship there with them having to deflect so many criticisms about their team as they do. But at the same time, I'm completely in the tank for Nashville, and I will be super pissed if they beat the Predators in the Stanley Cup final. I want nothing more right now out of life than to have PK Subban hoist the cup and then plan a parade, rent a party bus, and drive it past Mark Bergevin's house on a parade route. It's my only hope in life right now. And I think that right now there's legitimate fear that the Senators could spoil that party. I like I said to Merrick, man, like I think the Penguins have found new and exciting ways to get over challenges in these playoffs presented by their opponent and also presented by their own health. I do wonder whether or not they're going to be able to overcome injuries to Hornquist, to Rust, to Schultz, to not having Letang there, to having a diminished Sidney Crosby. Although, as Merrick said, wagering against Sidney Crosby in spots like this, you do it at your own peril. It's a lot to overcome. And I think when it came to the Capitals, as long as you followed a certain template, you could beat them. And I don't know if there's necessarily the same template to follow to beat the Ottawa Senators. They got close in game two as far as how to do it. But even then, it was a magnificent play by Phil Kessel that provided the only offense in that game. Two even strength goals in three games against the Ottawa Senators is a scary place to be if you're the Pittsburgh Penguins, but we shall see. That's about it here. I've mentioned this on Puck Soup. I should mention it here. As many of you saw, Jen Neal and Josh Cooper were laid off by Yahoo this week. They are part of the Puck Daddy family for quite a long time. It's a huge bummer. It's the reality of our surroundings in this business that these things happen. I am hopeful that this isn't the end for either of them in this business, and you know, they're both brilliant and we'll miss them big time if it means that this is goodbye, you know. So I appreciate everybody who actually reached out in the last 24 hours to me. I hope you did the same for Josh and Jen. But it's just the nature of the beast, and you know, me and Leahy and everybody else that works on the blog, we'll obviously, you know, work our asses off to ensure the level of quality remains where it is and that it's surpassed. But it's a heavy heart kind of week, as it is for a lot of people in this business whenever they see friends become casualties because of the financial realities of what we do. So anyways, drop a note to Coop and drop a note to Jen if you haven't, to say hey. Jen, of course, has been on the show a number of times. I know a lot of people really love when she joined us, and that won't change. I mean, it's nature of the beast that you say goodbye to people, but they never out of your lives once they're a part of your family. So that's all for me. And Jeffy will come back next week and talk playoff hockey and all that good stuff. And yeah, there it is. If you want to reach me, at Wyshynski on Twitter. And read all our stuff from Puck Daddy, and obviously follow Merrick's exploits at the Memorial Cup. He's doing Facebook Live stuff for Sportsnet. He's on the air for Sportsnet. And if you see him around, say hey, because he loves talking to you guys. All right, that's it. Thanks to Sam for making this happen, because it was a down-to-the-wire prospect as far as trying to get some studio time. And I'm glad we were able to do this, because we love you guys and wanted to hit you with something fresh every week. All right, talk to you next week. Bye.
Thanks, bud. Sorry about the intro, the extra music there.
Hey, no worries.
I'll just superimpose it afterwards, okay? Talk to you later, bud.
Oh, sorry. I shot my mic. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Okay, I was like, oh, thanks a lot, dude.
No. Thank you so much for finding the time, and that's and the outro music is fine.
Yeah, talk to you later, dude. Bye.
All right, bye.